Thank you. So I would like to thank the organizer for the kind invitation, and also I want to thank Eric Sawyer on this special occasion for his many mathematical contributions. One of them I will mention in my talk, which I believe has been mentioned a couple of times, is his joint work in 1992, weighted fraction integral on both Euclidean and homogeneous spaces. So they provide an important criteria to verify the boundedness of the weighted fraction integrals. And I will use some of the results here, but the focus of this talk is not on the boundedness of these inequalities, but rather on the sharp versions of these inequalities surrounding several important questions. First, the question is, what is the best constant that we can insert into these inequalities? Second, is this best constant achievable? In other words, can we find the optimizers, which when we plug in this inequality, the inequality holds with the best constant? And if we know there exists the existence of these optimizers, how about the uniqueness? And ultimately, can we write the formula for these optimizers? Okay, if we cannot answer them explicitly, we have to compromise. How do we compromise? What information can we provide for these optimizers and the best constants? These are the major questions I want to answer in my talk. Okay, so first, this is the inequality I want to concentrate on in this talk. It is introduced by Hardy Littlewood in 1930s and generalized by Sobolev to all dimensions in 1938, so that's why these inequalities bear their names. And the condition here can be achieved by a simple dilation on F and G. In order to get the sharp version of these inequalities, there are a lot of people making contributions. And this may not be the complete list, but I want to mention Leib's work in 1983, Collin and Lass' work in 1990, and Frank Leib's work in 1920. And I want to mention that both Leib and Collin Lass' work depends on rearrangement inequalities heavily. And the first rearrangement-free proof was provided by Frank Leib very recently. Frank and Leib in 2010, okay? And special cases, of course, there has been a long history by Rosen, Albin, Talenti. They connect this inequality with asymptotic inequalities. There's a deep connection between these inequalities, and recently Collin, Carrido, and Lass connects this inequality with fast diffusion equations. So it turns out these optimizers maximize the inequality because a monotonicity property of the solution for a fast diffusion equation. So it turns out there are a lot of connections between this inequality to other areas, and I think there must be more to explore in the future. So existence of the maximizers. Majorly, there are two approaches. Leib's work concerning use symmetric approach, and Leon's work using concentration compactness. And there are some other works as well. Uniqueness of the maximizers are done by Yan Li, Chen Li, and O around 2004, 2005, and 2006. And it's still open, what is the best constant, and what are the maximizers when R doesn't equal to S, because this formula for the best constant and maximizers only holds if R equals S. Okay, so this is what we know so far about how the little Sobolev inequality on the Euclidean space. And I want to give one talk. I want to give one proof, because every mathematical talk contains at least one proof. And at least this one is one of my favorite ones. And actually, we're going to derive the maximizers right here when R equals S. And this is due to Collin Lass, Leib, and Lass in 1990s. The major line is to convert this inequality from Rn cross Rn to Sn cross Rn. Okay? And let's do this. I want to go over every step, because actually this formula is hidden in one of the steps. So let's try to dig it out. So first, I want to introduce this projection. This projection transforms X to SS. I'm sorry, I messed up the indices because I already used SS for their S norm, but I hope this is not confusing. This X is a Euclidean point, and S is a point on the sphere. And this is the spherographic projection from the Euclidean space to SN. And on SN, actually, we have n argument here and one more argument here, so there are n plus 1 coordinates. And the Jacobian of this transform is a very nice form. And more importantly, the distance is also preserved. It's not strictly preserved, but we have two factors coming out. And this factor, very nicely, is just it's the Jacobian to 1 over a dimension, right? So you can tell from here. So this factor is just 1 over n, the Jacobian to 1 over n's power. And then we define the function capital F and capital G on the sphere with the same LR norm and RS and LS norm. And that's why we have to have one more factor right here. Okay, so now let's see what we have for this double integral on SN cross SN. We hope we can have a very nice form. And let's see what we need in order to achieve this nice form. So this is capital F and capital G divided by S minus T to lambda dS dt. Let's concentrate on the F and S first. And let's see what can we have. SN cross SN. We're going to replace capital F by small f. So we have one more factor coming out from here, so it's going to be J, the Jacobian to 1 over R's power. Okay, on the bottom, we have this factor involving the Jacobian. So it's going to be Jacobian, actually it's going to be lambda divided by 2n. I believe it will be lambda divided by 2n, because if you take square root on both sides, you have 1 over 2 on this factor, and then with 1 over n, and with is power lambda. Okay, so it's going to be Jacobian to lambda over 2n. And because we changed the variable, so we should have a Jacobian. But this Jacobian is actually the Jacobian of the transform from Rn to Sn, so it's going to be Jacobian to negative 1. Okay, and we want to cancel all these factors. And let's see, what do we need? We have J to 1 over R minus 1 minus lambda over 2n. Let's see. I believe I made some mistake here. This should be plus. So this one should be minus, I think. This guy equals 1, so the only possibility is 1 over r equals 1 minus lambda divided 2n. Okay, this is for the Jacobian of x. And similarly, we have to require a Jacobian coming out from change of variable for y, which means we have to require 1 over s equals 1 minus lambda over 2n as well. So we can cancel both of the Jacobians. And this guy will equal to a double integral on the Euclidean space exactly. Dx dy. So we have to require these two conditions in order to have this double integral equal on both scenarios. Okay, that's why we have to require this condition, R equals S equals this quantity. Okay, and next is going to be very interesting. So this guy on the left-hand side is rotational invariant for any rotation in Rn, but the right-hand side is going to be rotationally invariant for any rotation in Rn plus 1. So we have one dimensional more rotationally invariant, but actually we have one dimensional more restriction. Okay? And one can also assume G equals F bar because the form is positive definite. Then the max matters of the left-hand side, F. And we can assume both F and G are F, and we can also assume they are both real. So F should be radial symmetric. You can prove this by arrangement, rearrangement, symmetrization, or moving plane, moving sphere methods. So let's go back and see what happens if small f is reduced metric. If small f is a reduced metric, let's concentrate on these guys. Let's concentrate on these guys. And if f is reduced metric, actually, capital F will be constant on every level. Let's see if this is the north pole. Then if we transform small f to capital F, on every level, capital F should be a constant, because if you concentrate on the first n argument of this transformation, it doesn't really change if small f is reduced metric. Okay, so capital F is a constant on every level. This level is a horizontal level perpendicular to the north pole. Okay, and then we're going to perform a rotation on this Sn. We're going to perform a rotation on Sn. So we perform a rotation on Sn, so this capital F is going to be a capital theta, capital F theta, and this transforms the north pole to some point on this level, to some point on this level. Okay? Because this double integral is rotational invariant, that means this F theta is still a maximizer. F theta is still a maximizer, and then we transform this F theta back to the Euclidean space to small f theta. This small f theta should be also a maximizer because these two double integrals equal to each other. And because we know in Euclidean space, every maximizer has to be reduced metric, that means small f is still reduced metric. So we come back to the sphere. If f small f theta is reduced metric, that means capital F theta is still a constant on every level. But this time, this level, the function value on this level is the function value for a north pole. So in the beginning, if we transform this north pole to any arbitrary level, the value on this level should be equal to the north pole, and this level can be chosen arbitrarily. That means the maximizer on the sphere has to be a constant. This constant is the constant on the north pole, but actually north pole is just any point you choose. It's not very special. Okay, now we come back to see what happens if capital F is a constant, and we can actually dig it out for this formula. And it turns out if capital F is a constant, then small f is just this guy, the reciprocal of this guy. Okay, and that is why we have this nice form for the maximizer. This maximizer is indeed the Jacobian. Okay, so let's rest a little bit and think about all the process and see what is the bad news and what is the good news. Bad news, too beautiful to be generalized. Because we have to require these two conditions, R equals S to this very strong condition. And if we choose to use other norms, S doesn't equal to R, then the Jacobians here cannot be canceled. So the form on the sphere is not so beautiful. At least the two double integrals cannot be equal to each other. And actually, it is not going to be rotational invariant. So that is the main bad news for us. But good news is, even though it is very restrictive, but still it has some applications on other inequalities. And recently done by Chris, Michael Chris, to do random-like transforming inequalities, which we begin from the sphere. Which we begin with the sphere. So this is the whole story for this inequality on Rn. And also, Stein and Wise introduced this weighted HLS inequalities with the polynomial weights. And these weights are also called Stein-Wise weights, and the corresponding fraction integral is also called Stein-Wise potential. And concerning the sharp version of this inequality, DR is not so much known so far. First, the existence of the maximizer. Lieb proved there exists. It's not strictly exist, but it proved the existence result only if alpha and beta are both non-negative. But actually, the requirement for alpha and beta is alpha plus beta is non-negative. So we don't know what if one of them is negative. The existence is unknown so far. And the uniqueness of this maximizer is done by Chen and Li around 2007. This study, the corresponding Euler-Lagrange inequality, Euler-Lagrange system, and proved the uniqueness of the maximizers. And the singularity analysis and the asymptotic behavior of the max matters is also done by their group around 2006 and 2007. And under a very special case, R equals S and alpha equals beta equals this quantity, they were able to provide the explicit formula for the max matter for some constant C and T here. And we can actually see this max matter and compare with the maximum here. The maximum here has no singularity. It's all smooth over the real space. So other than that, we don't know. So we're still hoping we can do something interesting. Okay, now let's switch our attention to these inequalities on the Hazard group. There are some motivations here. First motivation is, of course, these inequalities on Heisenberg group has its own interests. But the other one is because if you already have the impression, the most important tool for Euclidean space is the rearrangement inequality, which are not available on Heisenberg group. So as we are finding the new paths to solve these inequalities on Heisenberg group, well, our eye should not be limited to Heisenberg group. We can actually come back to Euclidean space and provide a different point of view. We can provide some different approaches, but actually this is Frank and Lieb's inspiration for their first proof without using rearrangement. So let's see what method do we need to impose in order to study this kind of inequality without using rearrangement. This one was introduced by Fallon and Stein in 1973 and 1974. And when lambda equals Q minus 2 and R equals S, Garrison and Lee gave the sharp version for this inequality. And their method is actually studying the dual of this inequality, sublift inequality, and then study the sub-elliptic case. So the proof is very beautiful, but it is very restrictive. So very recently, Frank and Lieb was able to generalize their result to all lambda between 0 and Q. And still we have to require R equals S. And the method is very similar to the method I introduced here, and we have to transform this double integral to a complex sphere. Okay, so it's a very new result, and they generalized Jefferson Lee's work like around 20 years ago. So the max matter looks like this. Okay, still no singularities, and because the dilation is Z, and Z, let me remind you what is the element in Hn. In the Heisenberg group Hn, every element looks like this. Z is in Cn and T is a real number. T is a real number. So the dilation in the complex argument and the real argument is different. So that's why we have two different powers for the complex argument and the real argument right here. And I was able to provide an upper bound for the best constant here. But this upper bound is actually it's not very precise because even when R equals S, this quantity is slightly larger than the quantity they have when you plug these max matters back into the double integral. Okay, but this is actually some information we can tell for the best constants when R doesn't equal to S. So open all the others. We don't know anything about the max matter and the best constants when R equals, when R doesn't equal to S. Even existence is still, I think it's still open now. Okay, now let's discuss a little bit about proving existence of the max matter, but I don't think I have enough time here, so I am just gonna mention the third step. Symmetrization and the concentration compactness, these are the two major tools to verify the existence of the max matter. I put a box here because of its disease. We know symmetrization cannot be applied for Heisenberg group, so we have to use a very slightly modified concentration compactness invented by Lyons like 20 years ago. And actually the big difference between these two approaches is when we use symmetrization, we're actually excluding the actions causing loss of compactness. For instance, the translation and dilation. We want to exclude as many as possible in order to concentrate on only the function is not affected by these actions. And concentration compactness, actually, I don't really care about what is causing them, what is causing the loss of compactness. I am going to include all of these actions, but I'm going to prove these are the only reason why the compactness is lost here. Loss of compactness means you always have a maximizing sequence, but you don't know you have a limit for your sequence. The compactness is lost here. Okay, that's the big difference between these two approaches. And that is why in this guy, we actually consider this is actually the dilation and this is the translation. Okay, we include both of these two actions, but we prove these are the only two actions which are causing loss of compactness. Okay, so last, let's talk something about weighted HLS inequalities on the Heisenberg group. So we know very little about these inequalities. And it was proved by me, my advisor Lu, and my colleague Zhu, in this year using Sawyer and Williams criteria for the homogeneous space. But right here, we require several slightly different requirements for the power alpha and the power beta. And this weight is actually the whole weight. This weight is actually the whole weight. I'm going to use U for this element on the Heisenberg group. So it's a whole weight. This alpha cannot be too large, beta cannot be too large either. And we're able to provide some singularity analysis and the asymptotic behavior of the maximizers in a way we don't know the explicit form of the maximizers, but we can provide some of the information here. We know how it behaves around the singularities because we know without weight, the maximizer is smooth all over the space. You don't have any singularities. But if you have weight here, we expect there are singularities on the space. So we want to know how does it change around these singularities. And also we know how regular is it. How regular is it? So this is the work of ours this year. And open all others. We don't know anything about the formula, the best constant, either you have a bound for the best constant or existence, uniqueness, all the other things are open now. And the very interesting for Heisenberg is we introduce this weight as the whole weight. We can also study a partial weight. We replace this weight by only the complex argument part. And this is more interesting actually because we have to require this alpha to be slightly smaller because here originally it's going to be Q, but now we have to require this alpha to be slightly smaller, beta to be slightly smaller. And for this double integral, for this inequality, actually there is a non-existence result. Okay, I'm sorry, provided by Beckner, and still for a very special case. For this inequality, we're able to provide some similar information as we did for this whole weight inequality. And that is all of my talk, and I think this is a good spot for me to stop. Thank you. Yeah, we know the Euler-Lagrangian equation. Yeah, we have. Actually, in order to get the same... Yeah, we know the system. Actually, if here R equals S, you have the equation. When R doesn't equal to S, actually have a coupling for two equations. It's a system. It's a Euler-Lagrangian system. It's an integral system.
Fractional.
Yeah, fractional integral system. And in order to actually, this work, the uniqueness results are provided, approved by studying the system. By studying the system, moving plane or moving sphere for integral systems or integral equations.
Why not? So you have the extremas for
Oh, that's what in Arena. The extremists for the Heisenberg group. They're not only in which case?
Only Heisenberg, you mean with no weight? You mean this one?
No weight.
Yeah, okay.
Conformally.
But it's totally different with Euclidean space. The conformal transformation is different with the Euler one. Because in this card, in the Euclidean space, this double integral is actually conformally invariant.
Yes.
But this inequality, the version on the Heisenberg group is going to be a little bit complicated. The conformal transformation is totally different. It's not a. I frankly don't really know the transformation they need in order to have the double integral invariant, because in the Euclidean space you just need to reflect according to the sphere. But in the Heisenberg group, it's not that easy. You have to worry about the different dilation in Z and in T, so you have to develop a totally different transformation in order to have this double integral invariant.
Unit
ball of this? I don't know.
Okay.
You mean this one, 2010? I think they haven't published it. It is still on archive. The title is a rearrangement free proof for sharp hard data with sublift inequality.
Alexander,